The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
A new report has found that more than 20% of people living in Dublin's northeast inner city have experienced drug-related intimidation. Over 4 in 5 see intimidation as an issue, but less than 1 in 5 said they would actually report it. Now, I'm joined by the investigations editor with the Sunday World, Nicola Tallant, to talk about what's going on in the drug scene at the moment during this pandemic. Nicola, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, before we begin talking about that report which has been issued and what the drug dealers are up to, a murder investigation is underway after a 16-year-old boy died after being stabbed in the East Wall area of Dublin.
Yeah, in exactly this area that this report is actually talking about, there seems to have been some sort of a row last night, and they are looking for witnesses for it because it's not quite clear exactly what happened. But there was some sort of an altercation over a delivery, and one 16-year-old is dead and two others are in hospital. Now, reports from the local area are that the individual, I won't name the chap because it's too early, but he seemed to have been quite a popular local, not a troublemaker, and quite a sporty young guy from the local area. So I suppose we just have to wait and see exactly what happened there last night. But, you know, knife crime is on the increase and more people are carrying knives. We seem to be heading down the road of the UK, which has seen a constant increase in knife crime, and a lot of campaigns have had to be launched in order to try and communicate the message to young people. You're carrying a knife, and the reality is that you could end up killing somebody. You know, it's not just it's something that is going to give you protection.
You mentioned a delivery, something going wrong with it. Was it a drug delivery you were talking about?
No, I don't believe so. I think it was a delivery into the area. Not a drug delivery. It doesn't seem to have been anything necessarily to do with that or money collection or anything. But there is, you know, they are just looking for information still. So the information is sketchy. I haven't been able to find out much more than that, to be honest with you.
Now, this new report, which we want to talk about, almost a quarter of people in this area have experienced drug-related intimidation. I presume you would not be too surprised at that number.
No, I'm not in the remotest bit surprised with that number. It's not only that area, but there are other areas that have been blighted by drugs. You have to remember that we're looking at it all sort of kicking off towards the mid to late 1970s. So we are 40 years into this now, 40 years into these areas becoming, you know, drug dealing and drug taking has become completely embedded in these areas and in the communities. So you have addiction, and you have dealing going on. You have young dealers who are living lifestyles that are bloody expensive. You know, they're funding really expensive clothes, holidays, cars. They're funding people around them. They're funding girlfriends, families. It's all a face-saving, you know, exercise to show their power. And to fund that, they have to get the money and extricate it whatever way they can. And a lot of the money is got through intimidation, threats, and, you know, trying to squeeze money out of parents and relatives of addicts who they claim owe money. There's never an end to it. Even if you do pay up what they say you owe one day, they'll come back for more. So it's a really, really bad cycle. And as the years go past, it just seems to be coming part and parcel of life in these areas.
And the report outlines some terrible situations. For example, a father who was beaten up by his own son because he refused to pay the son's drug debt. I mean, that kind of thing. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's plenty of reports of there can be kneecappings, shootings that go unreported. You know, there will be evidence of it when people show up in hospital. No complaints or statements are made. There's windows put in. There's a real fear by people living in these communities because these aren't just threats. They're actually seeing the results of the violence. There have been people shot dead on the streets, in doorways. There have been kids left in, you know, very, very badly beaten, visibly. So these threats are very real to them. and the vandalism and all the rest of it. So it's a proper fear. It's not just a perceived fear. Yeah. It is a proper fear that people have, you know, in these areas. And look, you can look around and see the gangs of gangs, of course, you know, the strength in numbers for them on the streets when they start to intimidate people. And they just have no fear of law or order or orderly society. And you know, that's when they just become very dangerous. Yeah.
And you get, say, a Garda car arrives in an area, drives round a complex, everything seems fine, but they're almost, like creatures who hide underground when you're walking through the forest. You don't see them, but they are there. And as soon as the Garda go, they emerge once again to do whatever they want to do.
And, you know, intimidation by its very nature. Take it back to the schoolyard, to bullying. It can be a look. It can be a whisper. It's never, or it often isn't, it's something that happens openly in front of figures of authorities. It'll happen sort of in the background or you know, on the side. Look, I think it's a problem. It's not just the incidents that happen. There's a much bigger issue here. And the issue is that we are all, as a society, as a country, funding this because people aren't taking responsibility outside of the areas. They're quite happy to just, you know, other areas of the city, other areas of the country, to sit back and sort of look in, maybe feel a little bit of pity, but leave it at that. The fact of the matter is that the finances that go around drugs, there's a demand. There's people going out and they're buying drugs. They are funding that. There are companies, businesses, solicitors, architects, you name it, that are taking what they understand and know to be drug money, and it's financing their businesses. And, you know, it just goes on and on.
Is there any way for, you know, the way they got Al Capone in the end, it was for tax. I mean, is there any way when some ne'er-do-well commissions an architect to design a house, that you go after the architect for taking, you know, money that is clearly ill-gotten?
Certainly, that is something that I think is being looked at and will be more and more in the future. And not to just single out architects,
For example, we know that car dealers have been used to launder money.
Yeah.
And we've seen the cab attack and seize loads of vehicles and sometimes cash at some of these places. So that's one area where they have been active.
I mean, absolutely. But I mean, if you look at, say, the travel industry, and look, they have their enough problems at the moment, really, without targeting them. But just as an example, if you have a young guy, you know, coming in 18, 19 years of age, clearly no job, and being able to afford a holiday to Mexico, 40,000 for him plus all his family, and you're taking that money, surely to goodness you realise where that money is coming from, because it hasn't been earned legitimately. So there is a responsibility on all of us all along the way to sort of alert, to be responsible in the way these finances are being spent, because we are just, you know, it's not just within the north inner city that these problems are. It's every one of us have to try and take responsibility and try and share the sense of responsibility for that. And that's a mind change, really. And it's something.
Now you mentioned, as well as not to target architects and travel agents and car dealers specifically, you also mentioned solicitors. But what you always hear from solicitors is that everyone's entitled to a defence.
They are, but solicitors aren't only just, you know, working on criminal cases. Solicitors can be involved in conveyancy for houses and for other sort of, you know, setups of businesses. Obviously, laundering is a big issue because, you know, once these guys extract the money from some poor individual that they have intimidated into, you know, handing them out 20,000, and they'll do that to many people in one day even, that money then has to go into the legitimate system. So there's a lot of people along the way that are involved in that. And it is really something that we just, as a society, if we can feel a sense of shame for that, for our united responsibility for what's happening within the drug industry. Because, as I say, really, what's these communities like, this is 40 years plus going on. And those very early drug dealers and or drug users who were initially funding the dealers, any of those that are still alive are probably grandparents now, and they could be looking at their grandchildren going down the same road at this stage. I mean, you know, it is really getting embedded deeply, deeply embedded in these communities. And the you know, the sense of hopelessness must be huge. I think COVID is going to have increased, once we eventually come out of it, is going to have increased that sense of marginalisation they feel, because it will have increased the gap between rich and poor.
Some of the News Talk texters say we should consider our own stop and search bill to nip carrying knives in the bud. Another one, I don't think you can overestimate the trauma some of the young people growing up in these areas go through. Growing up with or around addicts and seeing violence up close has to have a hugely detrimental impact on a young mind. Walk through the North Inner City and you can see just the tip of the iceberg, but you know life is very different there. Once these kids take a knife or a gun, they need to be locked up, but we need to stop them getting there in the first place. Mags in Dublin says, 40 years, my goodness, what does this tell us? It tells us this, it's time for a new approach to drugs in Ireland. And that's always the dilemma, you know, do you liberalise the whole drugs regime so people buy their stuff, you know, in the corner shop? Or, you know, would that simply create more addicts and more trouble? Another one from Barry. The young scumbags are constantly in our local St. Anne's Park, especially around dusk, dressed permanently in black on their electric bikes, intimidating young kids and families, beating up kids and threatening with knives. I've been onto the guards regularly. Very seldom do I see them in the park. These people rule the streets, says Barry. Michael says, it's not only in Dublin. I've witnessed young teenage boys openly drug dealing in the middle-class suburbs of Galway City during daylight hours. The parents need to step up and stop their young teenage kids aimlessly roaming the streets in gangs. You know, Nicola, it is possible sometimes to do U-turns. You know, Giuliani, before he discredited himself disgracefully with his carry-on with Trump, when he was mayor of New York, they managed to turn the city around. Now, some people said it just moved to Jersey. But, you know, it can be done. Is there any prospect that, you know, with Garda resources, political will, that anything can be done to turn this around for the people, the good people who want to rid themselves of the drugs in their community?
I do believe the change can always happen. It would be a united effort. And I'm glad you mentioned, you know, the political will as well as the guards, because the guards are always being looked upon. You know, what more can they do? In the end of the day, they're there to protect the community. They're not social workers. They're not there to change, you know, the causes of this, you know, that are within the home. And one of your texters there mentioned parents. Like, it's parenting where it starts. And, you know, parenting obviously in your postcode are the two most important things that are, you know, you're lucky or unlucky in when you start off in life with those two. But, you know, there is all sorts of ways. There's a really deep-seated mindset which is helping the dealers and those who are intimidated in all these communities. And that is that Omerta code, which exists, which is very deep seated and which is believed. And it's only protecting the aggressors and nobody else. And there is that attitude in those communities that no matter what happens, you don't, as they call it, rat, which means you don't speak up, you don't tell the truth, you don't give a statement, you don't go to court. You can say
that's a part of the culture now. You don't rat on people in your neighbourhood. But is that based on, you know, some Robin Hood kind of attitude, or is it based on fear? I can't rat. You know, it's not that I won't rat. I can't rat or I will pay.
Well, in my opinion, it's pushed largely by those it benefits, who are the ones who are causing the intimidation and the fear in the first place, and who are, you know, drug dealing or committing other crimes, because of course it benefits them. If nobody rats, they can get away with it. But it has been sort of accepted unquestioningly within these societies. And I think there's a starting point maybe that, you know, you can try and work on changing that cultural belief, which is a nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense, because why would you live under intimidation and protect the intimidator? And that's exactly what that code is all about. And it comes
finally,
straight
Nicola,
from Mafia down.
Some of the people asking, how is the drug industry surviving during COVID-19 with a few flights? Another one, would a zero COVID plan have the bonus of letting zero drugs in? Silver lining, maybe. Julie, what about testing people in the workplace? So many professionals take drugs. We need a deterrent, supply and demand, get rid of the demand. And obviously the suppliers suffer. How are they coping in lockdown, these drug dealers?
Coping very, very well. And, you know, the fact is they're very malleable. They're able to change very quickly. The figures are coming out claiming that there's been no change, really. In fact, there's been an increase in drug use and supply. That I do find hard to believe, because there has been a change in socialisation. So it has to have affected it some way. It can usually take quite some time for the figures and for the picture to become accurate because of the nature of the world. It is an underworld. It is, you know, a more secretive society than the norm. So the fact of the matter is there's opportunities there for guards with the lockdowns, with the checkpoints on the roads, with the problems with transportation. Brexit has caused another bit of a problem. Drugs come in from the UK, money goes out. So there's constant that transport is happening, and that has been affected. And we're seeing bigger seizures of cash, vacuum packed, being transported around the country, because in many cases they can't get it out. They're stashing it. And there's been quite a lot of opportunities there for guards when it comes to seizures as a result.
Nicola, thank you very much for joining us. Investigations editor with the Sunday World, Nicola Tallant.